the first podcast for you?
Yeah, first podcast.
Oh, man, I'm honored. Yeah, dude. I really am, feels dude. Great, it's a special
dude.
Moment.
Yeah, dude. I've always wanted to do this.
Cheers. Well, we are live hanging out at KMG Studios, where you teach Ableton.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like an absolute champ. I've sat in on a few of your classes without you really knowing it for like 15 seconds, and I was like, yeah, he's a good teacher.
Dude, I try, man. I've been teaching myself all this stuff for so long, and I honestly get a lot out of teaching other people.
Yeah.
It's really, really dope. Yeah, I just had a class graduate today, and they all cried at the end, and we all hugged.
Just hugging and weeping.
It's so cool to take somebody who doesn't understand how to make music or really how music works in the slightest and like open them up to this world of the most magical and interactive and spiritual journal that you could possibly ever have in your life is just your music.
Dude, you know? 100% feel that.
Yeah.
It's like really personal, you know, like you putting a piece of your expression out into the world. And teaching other people to do the same thing. Like,
Music saved my life. I mean, I think almost every musician can say that, you know? And like, for me to be able to give people an outlet for themselves and, you know, people who come into a music class, I feel like too, are searching for something. Mm-hmm. Anyone who wants to get into music is like searching for something, you know? And I feel like in some sort of weird dimensional riff timeline thing, it's like, you know, they're looking for music. And like teaching them that language to be able to express themselves and go about that is one of the most rewarding things ever. Like so many people tell me like, I don't know what I would do with myself if I didn't have music. Like, thank you so much. And I'm like, no, thank you. Thank yourself for signing yourself up for this.
Yeah.
Like I just kind of walked you through the door, but I mean, yeah, man, music for me has always been just like such a savior, you know? Like
yeah.
I always tell this story of, you know, when you're really depressed and you don't know what's going on in your life, it's so hard to put your feet on the ground the next day. You wake up in bed and you're like, why the hell would I get out of bed?
Yeah.
You know? And then when you make music, especially on a laptop in Ableton, it's so cool. And that's why it's so much of a journal, because everything's recorded, you know, and everything's there. And like, you're going from waking up and sort of being like, I don't have a reason to put my feet on the ground. Screw this. You wake up and you go, did I make a slapper last night? And then you go and open up your laptop and put on your headphones. You're like, oh my God, I did. Yes, this is so sick. And like ever since that happened to me for the first time, I knew I was just like hooked on making like music, especially in Ableton and stuff like that. And
it either goes one way or the other in my experience. You wake up the next morning and you listen to what you did the night before, and it's either like absolute garbage or you're like, no, it still slaps.
Yeah And the thing about it too being absolute garbage too is that I like to say, like, well, did you still have fun doing it?
Yeah.
Did you have fun making absolute garbage?
Yeah,
because that's time well spent, you know.
Dude, like, yeah, yeah. I mean, and your garbage to somebody else might be like their favorite song.
Yo, absolutely. You know, like, music is subjective. So what's complete crap to you might be like amazing to somebody else, or super fresh or innovative and stuff like that.
I mean, I almost gave up on the Squishmallow album that I made that you helped. You gave me some good feedback on, which was really fun. Like, it's the stupidest idea about like a dubstep album about Squishmallows that take over the world. And I almost threw it away and I was like, you know, yeah, I'm just going to release it anyway. And like, I'm having fun making weird noises of like these squishy creatures. And like, it's been, yeah. So,
no, I love that album, dude. Thanks, I think it's great, dude. Yeah. I actually got gifted a Squishmallow after my last show.
That's a huge gift.
Like, people love Squishmallows. I love Squishmallows. Squishmallow actually helped me fall asleep on the plane home for the first time. I've never fallen asleep on a plane before.
They're so comfy.
And I just leaned my head up to it. I named him Potato. He's a little rabbit with a little pouch, so some sort of marsupial rabbit creature.
I love that.
And I just laid my head on there, and I was 4.5 hour flight, and I woke up with an hour and a half later, and it was all Squishmallow, and like, yeah. Yeah,
if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, Squishmallow is like the softest pillow, and they're all like different creatures, like, you know.
They're adorable.
Like sloths or whatever. I have a sloth named Jerry. I almost brought him today, actually.
Oh, I remember Jerry.
I should have brought him.
Yeah.
He talks about you often.
I tell him I say hi.
I will.
Yeah, it was really cool because like I felt like some like older people were like, why does this grown man have a Squishmallow? But then I was seeing like other like little kids with Squishmallows, and then like I swear one of them like gave me like a chin nod, like, sup, nice squish.
Yeah.
Like part of the Squish gang. I'm like, yeah.
Squish gang.
Yeah.
It's a cult following, man. I've seen all ages, shapes, and sizes of people carrying around like little stuffed pillow creatures.
They're so awesome.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could talk more about Squishmallows, but I would love for people to get to know you a little bit better. You're teaching at KMG, like we mentioned, and you just finished up a class today. Shout out again to KMG.
Yeah, shout out KMG.
Anybody listening to this episode, If you're ever traveling through Denver and you want to book studio time, or if you're interested in Ableton classes, I can vouch for this place. Place is amazing. It's been a good vibe. And like, I feel really grateful personally, because I feel like Drew and you and Drew here has just like really opened up the doors to me and the podcast and just letting me use the space.
It's an awesome place. We got all the, we got like, it's, I think it's one of the, like the nicest studios I've been in Denver, and we've got everything, and from everything to like, you know, helping people record a podcast or help them write songs or whatever. It's just cool to be in this part of the community, especially trying to like, you know, help other people make music and stuff like that. It's just such a rewarding job. And yeah, I love this place. There's so much cool stuff to do here.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool toys too, man. Yeah. I mean, this is a beautiful console. It's SSL.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know how to use it, but gosh darn, does it look cool. I use it as a, as an Instagram background a lot, but,
it's good for the reel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's also a lot of stuff down here you can't.
Yeah. I really like the mics and the rooms and stuff like that. I just spent like 4 hours not this last weekend, but the weekend before, just like miking up my guitar amp with different mics and stuff like
sweet.
And like,
yeah,
being able to be loud as I want here and stuff like that. And just
this is a good place to be loud
and stuff like that. It's super awesome to be in a space like this.
Do you ever record like any of your tracks, or do reamping, or use a lot of the gear for your own music?
I just started. I mean, so honestly, like it's homemade spaceship, right? So it's kind of like the whole concept has been like, what's in the garage? Let's make a song out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm very blessed to have this as my garage now. So there's like lots of stuff, but,
nice garage.
Yeah. I very recently was working on a track, and I actually like was, I decided to do live hi-hats. So I grabbed a Neumann, I think a KH like 104, I think it's called, or something like that. I don't know. I just know it's expensive and I shouldn't break it. But I just grabbed the hi-hat and I mic'd it up, and I just recorded live hi-hats.
Oh, sweet.
And it had such like a cool vibe to it and stuff like that. Just the liveness and the
totally, the
good recording. So yeah, I have been kind of doing that a little bit now that I have that at my disposal, but it's never been an integral part. There's nothing integral to my music process. It's just literally whatever I have around me, because that's just what it's always been. And
yeah,
I've always been really inspired. Like, for you to look around yourself, no matter where you are, and say that there is no inspiration is absolute bullshit. You know, if we go back to the times of like the 40s and stuff like that, where you had to record another tape machine with another tape machine to be able to like resample anything or anything like that, like what we have available to us with just iPhones alone is absurd.
Yeah.
You know, so like I've never said that I really need anything to make music. There's always something there. One of my favorite quotes is from those, the Twitch Skrillex streams, his like tutorial things he put on Twitch that I feel like keep getting taken down and reposted. But he just says, you can make something cool out of anything. And I believe he takes like a chicken and like turns it into like a dope, like bangarang, like synth rip thing or something like that. So it's like, cool. If you can download a chicken sample, dude, or like take any weird sound, you can stretch it, play with it.
Totally.
Yeah. One of my biggest influences, Musique Concrète, is a bunch of people in the 40s who were like the first people to sort of like record another tape machine with another tape machine. And like they would just take like weird bells and reverse them and like gravel and like all sorts of stuff like that, and just work with any sound and keep like rolling around a sound until you get something interesting out of it.
Yeah.
And if you're too targeted, like, oh, I need this sound, so I'm gonna do it, you might not find it. But if you're open to whatever comes out of it, you know, I'm just going to take this sound and roll it around a little bit. And then you're like, oh, that would make a great transition sound.
Yeah.
That would make a cool bass sound. That would make a cool like percussive sound, you know? You kind of lower your expectations and open yourself up to stuff. Like, you can just play with anything. And eventually, if you just keep moving, something cool will fall out of it, you know? So,
I feel like that's how a lot of movie sound design is made. I talked with Roka Sound on the previous podcast episode, and he got really creative using like all different kinds of materials. I know, like we talked about for like the Jurassic Park movie, they took like baby elephants and like and they recorded them for the T-Rex sound of the T-Rex like screaming, and like layered it with a bunch of stuff. And like, I know that one of the guys, what is that movie? It was like about the giant sandworm. Is that what it was called? It might have been Dune. But is that the movie, the giant sandworm comes out?
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's newer, so with that really fair-skinned, handsome fellow, Timothy Chalamet or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. So when the actual sound of the worm eating like stuff and coming out of the ground is a guy literally swallowing a microphone.
Oh, that's dope.
He like literally took a lapel and just shoved it down his throat and then like had to pull it back out and regurgitate it. That was his.
Did he just put the lapel mic back and act like he didn't do anything with it?
Maybe. I don't know if it was mic or not. Hopefully he cleaned it off.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I love that. I know that like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the sound of the meatballs hitting the ground was just wet paper towels being thrown.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I love that.
That makes sense.
Actually, my most popular song right now, Pockets, made with Vibe Squad. We called it Pockets because it started with stuff that was in my pockets. So like it started off like I made a really simple drum beat and I had a lighter and I was drinking a cup of tea. So I just started hitting the lighter on the teacup to make like a cowbell. And then I jingled my keys too. And I had a piece of paper that I ended up using a wavetable synth on, like a granular synthesis, to create that really fuzzy bass.
Okay.
And a granular synth, for anyone, it just takes like a microscopic loop of sound, essentially. And sort of you just loop like 0.1 of a second of a sound.
Yeah.
And that sort of oscillate something and create tone, which means it's just spinning around a certain amount of times per second. And so I used like a bunch of stuff in my pockets to make the song. And
that's cool, man.
And so it's almost got like 500,000 plays right now, which I think is super awesome. So,
yeah, that's dope. Yeah. Yeah, you've been killing it, man. Like I've loved the collabs that you've been doing with a lot of artists that I also love. And like you definitely have a sound. And I think that's something that's hard for a lot of artists is to feel like they have and can own like their own sound, you know, and that's pretty tough. But I feel like you definitely have that.
I'm flattered that you say that because I struggled with that for so long. Being like a multi-instrumentalist and stuff like that, and also having like, I mean, everyone has kind of like a wide range of music that they like and stuff like that. For a long time, I had a really hard time like pinning down one type of thing to do. And so thank you, because I feel like that's one of my biggest insecurities is that I feel like my shit's kind of all over the place. But what I found is that like, you know, I have this sort of method of, I like to call it like creating worlds and then destroying them.
Okay.
Kind of. Yeah. So as long as I can kind of do that. And also I've kind of really learned to kind of stick to what I know best for Homemade Spaceship. That's been really helpful too, because I can do lots of stuff and I can try to like half-ass a lot of other stuff, but like, I know that like simpler and sampling, especially like one note sampling, taking one note of a piano and sort of turning it into a whole piano, guitars, flutes. I grew up on hip hop and metal. So
I could hear it. Honestly,
like, I love the heaviness of metal, like bands like Black Dahlia Murder, Born of Osiris.
A classic.
Job for a Cowboy, Bring Me the Horizon, the old stuff.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, and then like Wu-Tang Clan and like Bone Thugs and stuff like that. Yeah. Like that soulfulness, then mixing it with the heaviness and stuff like that is
just like murder and like soulfulness.
Dude, yeah. Well, just high energy, not quite murder. Right. Like, cause that's funny you say that about metal. Cause like a lot of people, like, I don't know, some people definitely listen to metal and they're like, this is tough guy stuff. Rah. But like when I grew up, metal was like, we wouldn't like go like, oh, and get all crazy to metal. We'd like hearing the most brutal breakdown and just like, this chills me out.
Yeah.
This makes me relaxed.
It's like you're zen. You're doing yoga, listening to August Burns
it's
Red.
It's or funny. Something. Like it calms me down, which is funny. It doesn't like hype me up.
You know, it's funny because I can relate to that. I used to do that. I would just like drive in my car, smoke weed in high school and listen to just like heavy metal. And I was just zen.
Yeah, it's zen, dude. Yeah. And like for people who don't really get it, they think that it's like this angsty type of thing. But like if you're, I feel like maybe if you're like naturally angsty or something like that, like the angsty music calms you down.
Yeah.
And if you're naturally calm, the angsty music will make you angsty or whatever, but like, or vice or whatever. I think I got that right. But yeah, that's always been like an interesting thing. But yeah, my sound, I'm like just trying to really add that soulfulness with that heaviness. Cause that's what really gets me going is I want to like feel like the character is going through something.
This episode is sponsored by Loopy Pro. I've talked about this product on the podcast with multiple guests, especially when it comes to live looping, and I personally reached out to them. It can be a huge pain in the butt putting everything together for a live show, whether it's live looping or a more traditional setup. Sometimes your gear doesn't have all the features you need, and you have to settle or start plugging together a bunch of different expensive gadgets. Loopy Pro is a new live performance DAW and looper, which lets you easily build literally any kind of setup. You can get unlimited loops and one-shot clips, a fully capable mixer, support for multi-channel USB sound cards, lots of plug-in support with inserts, sends, instruments, tons of other stuff. But the thing that really brings a lot of artists to Loopy Pro is its deep but easy to use action system. which lets you effortlessly assemble the tools you need to follow your creative vision, especially with live looping. You'll never see anything like it, and you can control it all on one screen with a number of MIDI controllers, and you can even fully automate the entire performance experience. There are tons of artists out there using Loopy Pro at a professional level, like DubFX, Beardy Man, and many other artists have moved to Loopy Pro to solve a lot of their issues. It runs on iOS with macOS support coming soon. You can run their VST in a DAW, and you can try it out for yourself at loopypro.com, free for 7 days. So grab that free trial, and you can buy it for $30. Literally so cheap compared to many other plugins out there. For all that you get, $30 is literally nothing. Just don't drink coffee for 2 weeks and you'll have it forever. Check it out. Go to loopypro.com, download that free trial and test it out for yourself.
You know, and it's like they're going through a lot of drama or trauma or whatever it is. And it's this beautiful character who's put in these tough situations. Like a lot of my musical inspiration comes from video games, like the heart and soul of it all.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite video games is Kingdom Hearts, you know, where it's like Sora, a sweet little boy who just has a huge crush on this girl, gets zapped into another world and now has to defeat the Heartless and like all these evil people. And at his core, he's just this little kid, you know, but he always conquers and he always comes through. And it's like, here's this beautiful melody or here's these beautiful chords, this beautiful sample. And then it just goes into battle, you know?
Yeah, love that.
I think that's really cool. And that's a huge concept I put into my music too, is I feel like a good story has conflict.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
Yeah.
Like you take a very chill character and you put him in a very unchill situation. And a good song doesn't have necessarily conflict. It's more like contrast, you know, where it's like we took a beautiful melody and we turned it into the dirtiest thing possible. You know, and I think that that's like something that is classic storytelling.
Mm.
And that gives me always like a really good frame of how to start and where to go. You know, it's like, let's start with something and whatever characteristics it has, like say it's pretty or, you know, we can make it ugly. If it's cold sounding, we can make it hot sounding, you know, and just contrast these things. And that creates energy and sort of tells a story.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you're saying with that, because like, you know, everybody in the end of the day, maybe they can't describe why they love a song or their favorite song,
yeah,
but it makes them feel a certain way. So like that kind of mixes with some of that emotion and that soulfulness you're talking about. And that's one thing I love about your music as well, is like a lot of times people live for the drop in electronic music. Yeah. It's always about the drop, but that contrast is equally as important. Like the buildup in my mind is just as important as the drop or the main hook, because it's the connection between the intro and where you're inviting those people into the story and then where that story's going, creating that contrast before that main hook that people remember, is like you're really setting them up for this kind of journey that they're listening to. And like the melodies is really what people sing or remember.
Yeah. It's the pinnacle. It's the lowest common denominator of the music.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting to sort of like take this sort of journey. And I see what you're saying. And I love that, because like, for me, the beginning is sometimes the most important part. Like how are we starting off the setting?
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like that's what definitely sets apart like music, like mine and some other people and stuff like that. Like one of my biggest influences, like Pretty Lights, stuff like that. But like, is that like, it's not necessarily a beat for the club. It's a song.
Yeah.
And in my heart and in my eyes, there's a huge difference between a beat and a song. You know, a beat can be just as great as a song, but like a beat is meant to be listened to in a mix, or in a rap sense, it's meant to be a platform for a rapper, right? Or something like a vocalist or whatever. But a song tells a story, as to where like sort of like a mix, or I mean, a beat sort of is just part of a dance floor environment or something like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, which I think is really interesting. And I definitely say like, I write songs. I don't write beats.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm not throwing any shade on beats at all. I get down to some beats, you know, for sure. Like I grew up in like Chicago. So like house music's always been a thing. And like, you don't really listen to an entire house music song ever. Like it's 7 minutes long. Like you're not just going to put that. You listen to it in a mix, you know, like some of the greats, like Frankie Knuckles, you know, you listen to like one of his songs. It's like 7 minutes long, and, you know, it drags on and on. But you listen to a Frankie Knuckles mix, and it's the most bopping thing you've ever heard, and one thing leads into the next and stuff like that.
That's how a lot of people were discovered on SoundCloud, just creating mixes.
Yeah.
And it was a lot easier, especially if you're starting out and you've only got like, say, three or four songs fully finished that you're really proud of that you would play out. And then maybe you're like struggling as a newer producer or artist to like, you know, have a full set. Well, then like you can always take other mashups or take other tracks and then create a full mix. A lot of people have been discovered on SoundCloud just because they create great mixes. You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I do like doing mixes, but it's definitely very hard for me.
Really?
I have to do a lot of live edits, you know, and that's another reason why I play in Ableton. Because if I was trying to do that on CDJs, I would need four CDJs every time. Because like the intro loop would need to play, and then I would need to cue up the whole regular track. And so like a big thing of mine to make my shit mixable is that I have to take apart the songs. I don't necessarily do stems, but I usually take out like an introduction loop and an outro loop.
Okay.
And then I'll launch into the whole song and stuff like that. But like that would be so, I can't just use CDJs because like a lot of my songs start off like too big. There's too much going on, you know, versus like a house song or something like that. Or like a lot of like more like you know, dubstep or whatever. That it's just like kind of like starts off very minimal as to where my stuff doesn't a lot of times. So like I need to like, to be able to mix it, like break it down and stuff like that, so it makes sense and all sorts of stuff.
I saw you perform live a while ago. I think it was Winter Park, wasn't it?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Great show, by the way.
Thank
I had
you.
A lot of fun. Out of the whole night, you were definitely my favorite set. And I mean, everybody played great, but like I would be curious maybe for even people listening who are fans or followers are interested in setting up their Ableton live performance. Maybe we can nerd out for just a few seconds.
Absolutely.
I would love to know, like, you mentioned having like your intro, outro. Do you break up like one song across like three scenes on a track and you just kind of...
So I have a deck A and a deck B, and then I have my guitar, my flute, and then an extra deck for like samples or whatever. But usually the first clip will be the intro loop, and then the next clip will be like the beef of the track where I'm queuing it up. I can have various cue points in there too, because I still like to read the vibe. I think that's like what's really important. This dude, DJ Form, shout out Oren in Chicago, and Mark Fish taught me kind of like how to DJ properly. And, you know, it's all about getting that vibe right and stuff like that's the first vibe first, then tempo, then key when it comes to DJing. And so like to be able to cue up a different part or cue up a different group of tracks and stuff like that is really important to me to be like, okay, they don't want to do the dreamy part right now. You know, like it's 11 o'clock and everyone's hype. Like they don't have time for introspection right now, which is like the first half of the song. So let's cut to the second half where it gets really nasty and stuff like that.
Cool. So you kind of have like different edits within your set that you can jump into for each song.
Yeah. And I also will like group like a vibe of maybe 3 to 7 songs that are kind of like a heavier vibe or a dreamier vibe or something like
that.
That's
a good idea.
Yeah. So I can just cut down. So I'll have like my whole set kind of how I want to play it playlisted. But if I do want, everything's color-coded by tempo and like vibe kind of. So like a heavier vibe will be the darker shade of purple. The lighter vibe will be the lighter shade of purple for my like my 80 to 90 BPM stuff. And so I know I can scroll down real quick till I see the light purple and I can go into that vibe for a little bit too. But a lot of just deck A, deck B, intro loop, outro loop, and the beef of the song with different cue points. And then also I like kind of give myself an option to be able to read the room and change it up if I really, really need to.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of it sometimes is, like, especially like a headline set, I'm like, this is the vibe I'm bringing. Get on board or don't, kind of. But like, especially if I'm playing more like an earlier slot with a bigger artist or something like that, I definitely want to like cater to the room and stuff like that. Because I have a personal problem with like openers who are just going hamburgers at 9:30. Like... Yo, bro. Hey, nobody wants to do that right now.
Right. You gotta relax.
Yeah.
In the words of Mr. Meeseeks.
I like to respect that. And I love getting into the vibier stuff too, because like one of my favorite bands is like Explosions in the Sky. And last time I saw them at the Mishawaka, like it's just a bunch of people standing there with their arms folded and not moving at all, being like, this is the best night of my life. Yeah. Like they're not just like raging or anything like that, you know, it's just like standing around. And so like I love putting that out too. I remember playing at the Mishawaka with Closey, and the first half of my set was very, very vibey, and just like watching people just like be like, holy cow, looking up at the stars and stuff like that while I'm playing this vibey stuff. I was like, this is almost better than watching everyone ride the rail and go nuts, you know, like Totally. Like they're going more inward rather than pushing themselves outward. And I think that is like, if a musician can take you on that journey, that's the harder route, to go down. And I think that that's a lot of fun and really cool to affect people like that.
100%, man. Yeah. I think it's really important to play to the crowd rather than just having your own set list. And you're like, this is what it is. We're going to hit play and here we go. Like, and I've done that before. I'm definitely guilty of doing that, but being able to make your set flexible in that sense where you can kind of look around and see the mood of what's happening, which is probably, it's a lot easier to do in a smaller venue than it is when you're just looking at a sea of people. But you do a good job of that.
Thank you, man. Yeah. My music kind of definitely spans like a couple things. I've definitely tried to like break it down. Like, you know, my sound, like I said, was kind of all over the place with all sorts of stuff, but I've really broken it down into kind of like these two vibes of like, we're partying with aliens and having a good time, and it's like an outer space party, and everything's like funky and sci-fi sounding, and like, you know, crunk kind of has been like my favorite word to describe it. And then I have this sort of vibe that I feel like the perfect way to put it is like you're lost in space with someone you love. Mm. You know, like it's me and you in a spaceship. We're out of gas. We're in the middle of nowhere. There's nowhere to go. We're just looking at this nebula holding hands. You know, and it's
I hope
like,
that's how I die someday.
Dude,
that's
me too. Dude, yeah. Elon, make it happen.
Yeah, dude, shoot me into space. I don't need to come back. That would be the best way. Maybe when I turn like 80, like I'll just go for that.
Just go for that's it. That's the vibe. Dude, just blast me off, dude. Yeah, and just like
just go, know, just go out
really
looking at the stars.
Fat bag of whatever you need to go on, you know. You know, and just like
that's amazing.
Yeah,
if we're both single and we're 80, we'll do that
I'm
together.
I'm there with you.
We'll
bro.
Go, dude. Let's go.
Absolutely
amazing.
Dude. Yeah.
Did you hear yesterday about the congressional hearing? It was like a really big thing. Basically,
a bunch of
military people came together, and basically a bunch of whistleblowers from the government on the inside saying, "Hey, we've found tons of UAPs or basically UFOs."
Yep.
And there was like a long, long Congress hearing yesterday.
Yeah, they were like, hey, so these UFOs or whatever, let's call them UFOs for the people at home. They're like, did you find, who are the pilots? And they're like, non-human biological life forms.
Yes.
And that is like, what
crazy.
Else do you need, dude? Yeah, I'm a big Blink-182 fan. So Tom DeLonge quit Blink-182 to do this whole alien thing for a while before coming
really?
Back. Yeah, that's why he quit music. To the Stars is his like whole thing about like basically bringing up this knowledge, and he was able to fund it because nobody wants to fund that. And like, I guess he might be like suicide proof or something like that because he's so famous. So like, they can't just kill him, you know, or whatever kind of like crazy stuff. If they're like, because I mean, not that I'm like a conspiracy theorist, but I feel like that's what they like is the common joke about what they do. If you like invent a car that runs on water, it's like, oh my gosh, he just killed himself. He invented a car that runs on water. So like, but he's been bringing that stuff up forever. And like, ever since he quit Blink-182, I was so mad he quit Blink-182. And then I was like, oh, it's to do alien stuff. There's almost irrefutable evidence now that like...
That's so wild. Well, I mean, that was one thing that was brought up in the hearing yesterday. I watched maybe like 30 minutes of it, of like a recap. And they were talking about there was like a real government attempt to suppress military personnel from reporting these UFOs.
Yeah.
And you have like... Commander David Fravor from the Navy, and he saw like the big famous Tic Tac incident. I think it was like 2004. And finally he was able to like talk about it a lot more openly without any kind of repercussions. And Bob Lazar.
Yep. There's a great Netflix or Hulu documentary on him. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really amazing. He studied all the parts and stuff, because that's been the craziest thing is, yes, there has to be life out there. Right. But from the observable space we've seen versus the space that we've observed, I think that like, I forget who it was, but they said that basically it's like it's scooping up a pint of water from the ocean and saying, oh, there's no life in here.
Yeah.
You know, but the hardest thing is that, yes, there has to be life out there. But the thing is, for them to reach us, that they have to be able to travel at light speed. You know, they have to be able to travel almost instantaneously or super fast, which we don't know is necessarily possible. But from all that Bob Lazar stuff, they basically... have figured out that they don't use thrust. They don't use like forward propellant. And the thing about it is how they must be moving around space. It's like if you wanted to move a bowling ball across a bed, what we do right now is push the bowling ball. But what they think that they're doing to propel themselves through space is more like pushing down on the mattress in front of the bowling ball. So like distorting space-time and pushing down on space-time in front of the spaceship will pull the spaceship forward without like pulling your skin off because you're going so fast. So like because of all that, we think we know how they're traveling through space so fast and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think Bob called that Element 15, I think is what he referred to it as.
Yeah.
Which is like it's like some resource that's not from our world, basically, that allows you to kind of manipulate gravity. It has like a lot of different superpowers or whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Yeah, but, yeah. It's so cool, man.
Because he studied apparently at Area 51 or in that area. And like they took away his house. They had like random FBI raids on him for like years. Like it's really wild story. I think it's called Area 51 and Flying Saucers. It's like the document.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah, and I love the concept. One of my favorite things to think about alien life is like, so there's got to be some nasty. Like imagine if you just like ran into a random Earthling, right? And we were traveling space and we went to a planet. There's a lot of messed up people on Earth, right? There's a lot of racists and haters and evil people and mean people and people who want to hurt people and, you know, but then there's people like you and I, right? And if I picked up like a terrestrial from another planet, I'd be like, yo, what's up? Like, what do you want to do? What do you want to know? You want to hang out? What kind of music do you make?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, what do you do for fun? You know, like, check this out. Check out my instrument.
I want to hear alien music.
Exactly, dude. And that was actually the inspiration for the track I dropped actually today, Astro Jones.
Yeah, I listened to his great track, by the way. Yeah. Everybody out there, go give it a stream.
Yeah, yeah. Off the new album, Ghost Ride the Spaceship, which is coming out August 17th. Yeah, that whole inspiration behind that track was just like, cool, if you did run into a cool alien, how would that go? And my thought was, my first thing is like, I want to jam with him. And I've been learning flute over the past like 2 years and stuff like that. So my first thought was like, well, I'd bust out my flute and I'd be like, record this, you know, and like add a beat to it. And I imagine, you know, that his beats would be all wubby and stuff like that, like in futuristic sounding and like manipulated and stuff. Yeah. So like, yeah, that's really cool to think about. Like if you met a really cool alien and he was just like, what's up, dude? What do you want to do? You want to see some cool stuff? Like, heck yeah, man. And that's Astro Jones, you know?
I love
just
that.
Like the dope alien man who's just like, let's party, dude. You know? I imagine like an old guy you run into at like a Grateful Dead concert or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I'm imagining the alien sounding like a Grateful Dead guy with a little bit of a twang in his
alien
voice.
Alien beard and a lot of like alien jewelry on and like alien tie-dye and stuff. It's just like, I'm just an old guy looking for a good time, just having fun, you know?
Yeah, these laid-back country aliens.
Yeah, you know? And so like that was like a cool thought that I had that kind of helped like inspire that track. You know,
I love that concept.
Yeah,
I released an album called Alien Friends. It's actually very similar, like a year ago. And it's the same idea of like this guy, he's outcasted by society. He feels like he's not good enough. He doesn't have a lot of friends. So he just goes in the woods to be by himself and just kind of that's the end for him. And so he goes out and then he meets aliens and they become friends. And he tells the aliens, hey, all these people were mean to me. And then the aliens like basically destroy all those people. And then they fly out into the outer space together, happily ever after.
Yeah. That's like kind of like
based on a true story.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
When you were over at my place a while ago, we talked a little bit about the creative process and what that looks like in the psychology of music production. We talked a little bit about that. And I know that was something you want to talk about today too, a little bit more. So like when you are starting a track, like, is there any specific process that you do or do you get yourself in a certain headspace? Like how do you approach when you're starting like a blank canvas outside of just the technical world? But like, what are things you typically try to stay conscious of as you're like making stuff?
Something I'm always conscious of is that today is today's song. Tomorrow is tomorrow's song. And you're never going to write the perfect song ever. That's not a thing. Music is subjective. I used to always hold myself to this light that I need to wake up and write the most perfect song, and that never ended up turning out good.
It's true, though.
So the way I think about it, honestly, you know, I love what Beretta from the Glitch Mob said on Twitter one day. He says, I hate the term creator for musician. It's too close to God. We're much more like a cosmic midwife meets a line cook, you know? And it's just like, we kind of get what we get. So like, one of my like concepts that I've been really like kind of like meditating on when I go to create is that I feel like my brain is like an FM transmitter, like a radio, right? And there's all these different cosmic frequencies that I can dial into and tune into. And I have to take what frequency my brain is at right now, and I have to sort of dial that to the nearest vibe, whether that's a really hyphy song or a really relaxed song. And so that's something I'm very accepting now to whatever comes my way when I start writing and stuff like that. Because I am like, because I believe like those frequencies work as like apertures, right? So how tight or small it is, basically. And you've got to match that. So like, if I'm feeling like writing a vibier song today, or if I feel like that's the frequency I'm closest to dialing into and matching, that's what I go with. If I really feel like making something super heavy and something like that, or if I feel like that's what I'm going for, then I go that way. But I'm very open to whatever sort of comes my way and whatever seems like the closest vibe. It's really cool, actually. I usually almost always like try to write something heavy and crazy is like almost my intention, because I love that like super energetic stuff. Very recently, I had like a stint where I wrote like a really, really pretty song, you know, and I was like, I'm just going to write a really pretty song. I can't say which label yet, but I ended up sending it in. It got signed by like a very ideal label for my music. Yeah,
that's
very
awesome.
Dope label. So anyone in the EDM scene definitely knows this label. And I'm super excited because like that was the vibe of the day, man. And if I would have ignored that vibe and tried to force myself to write something heavy, I would never have gotten on this label and stuff like that, which is, you know, really cool. So just being really accepting to that openness of whatever the universe wants to give you, you know? So that's really cool too. And also, I feel like that is sort of guided by, you know, you have to know what you want too overall, and you have to be willing to accept certain things too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and knowing what you want, as well as sort of this balance of knowing what you want and accepting what you get, you know? And so like, you know, I really feel like I think about like, you know, a kid being hungry. If you're like a parent and your kid's hungry or something like that, it's like if you go, hey, what do you want to eat? And they go, oh, I don't know. It's like, well, screw you, dude. You know, I don't like, you want this? No. What about this? No. It's like, well, you know, tell me what you want. But if you ask the kid like, hey, what do you want to eat? And I want a bean burrito. Oh, dude, I can get you a bean burrito. It may not be the bean burrito of your dreams or the one you're thinking of right now, but I can get you that, you know? So really knowing what you want. I believe in manifestation a lot, but I don't believe it's some sort of hippie magic or like, you know, voodoo. I think it's psychological. So if you know what you want, you may not get exactly what you want, but you will get something close too. And also just being willing to accept the process. Another really big thing about the creative process for me is that I see it like going fishing, right? When you go fishing, you gotta just love going to the river and just sitting there with a beer and a smoke and a lawn chair and just chilling out in the sun. And that's it. That's all you get. That's my only expectation.
America.
It's to sit. I'm like a redneck without all the bad shit. You know? It's like, you know, you got to sit there and you got to enjoy just sitting there, you know? And if you catch a fish, boy, did the day just get better. But even if you didn't catch a fish, you still had fun by the river. You know, you still had fun just going there and just sitting around relaxing. And that's been a big helpful thing for my creative psychology too, is sort of going like, I don't care if I write a bad song today, because I'm going to have fun writing a bad song. Even if it sucks, God damn, I wouldn't have rather done anything else today. You know, I got to sit down and write music on a freaking laptop. Like I have unlimited tape. I have, you know, all the functions to reverse, invert, delete, you know, chop up, do all this stuff, record whatever I want. Like, even if the song I make sucks, I still had fun writing it, you know? And then so, you know, when I do write something good, I'm just wide-eyed ecstatic, you know?
The best feeling in the world.
It's so awesome. And even if I don't write anything good, I'm still like, ah, hell of a day though,
right?
You know? Versus like when I was like, you know, less in a good mind state, you know, and stuff like that.
Or overthinking the process.
Being or not in a good mind state, stuff like that. I get so pissed when I wouldn't write something good. And that made me scared to go to the river. It's because there could be a negative result, a painful result, which was really just me beating myself up.
Yeah.
And as the great Buddha says, desire is the root of all suffering. So if you don't desire anything, you won't suffer. Mm. If you don't desire to write a good song, you're not going to suffer when you don't. You know? And that suffering is just dead weight on your soul. You know, so it's like, I love stepping into the process with no expectations, just being so grateful to sit down and be able to write music today and be able to do that, you know? Like,
dude, that's so good, man. There's a lot of knowledge bombs you just dropped in there. Yeah. Use those for the highlight reels for the episode. Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree 100%. Is like, for me, I'm always trying to get out of my own way. And some people call that the flow state or whatever you want to call it, or like following the muse. Once you, I think, get to the point of where you're technically savvy enough, where you say, okay, I want to get here and you can actually execute it, then it's more so about, like, in my opinion and experience, it's more so of just like not overthinking and being willing to be really experimental in the process and not be afraid to mess shit up. And, and being able to, like, almost a playfulness. Like, when I look at myself when I was like 16 or 17 and I didn't know what I was doing, a lot of times I was having the most fun when I was making music.
Isn't that the best?
Isn't that crazy?
That's why me and my friend Sodon were talking about this the other day. We were like, I freaking love Faceplant because I have no clue how it works. Like,
yeah.
And it's so fun because I'm like, I'm going to grab this thing, connect this to here. And you're like, oh, like, that's dope. That would be perfect for this. Yeah. Which circles back to that other thing about, like, you know, you may not know exactly what you want to make, but when you're just doing random things, you're like, oh, that could be useful here. And like, yeah, just not knowing and stuff like that. And just, you know, I never let like music theory or anything like that sit in the driver's seat. It's always my imagination that sits in the driver's seat. I can look over to music theory and be like, hey, do you have anything to say about this? But music theory or all that technical knowledge never, ever takes the driver's seat. I got into this game of making music because I had a way too overactive imagination when I was a kid. When all I remember from fourth grade or like elementary school was, you know, that I'd look at my desk and I'd have like my pencil box and a couple pens and like, this was the spaceport. These two pens were like, this one was the warship and this one was the carrier, you know? And like, even just like sitting down at like, you know, at a park or something like that, I could make a whole world out of this tiny little thing, you know? And that's why I love music, because it lets me flex my imagination. And the second you think that there's something better than your imagination, you're pulling your own crap, you know? It's just like, you know, you need to like relax and let that go, which was part of the process too of like becoming a better musician, I feel like, was like, you know, and going through these processes of learning all these things and thinking they're going to be your saving grace. And isn't it the moral of the story that the saving grace was in you the whole time? And that's the same reason why you got into making music, because you're imaginative and you want to express yourself. So why would you take a textbook on how to express yourself and let that guide you? You got it, you know?
Yeah.
And like, so that's been a big thing to me too, man. It's just let the imagination go. And like, once you learn, and I hit this point probably like a couple years ago, once I really, really like, my buddy who goes to DU lent me all the DU like music textbooks, and I read through all of them and like all this sorts of stuff like that. And I was like, holy shit, you can really just do whatever you want. You know, like if you take five random notes, that's going to be in some sort of Phrygian dominant or like, you know, super Locrian thing or something like that, you know? So it's like, once you learn everything and you really understand everything, this light bulb goes off in your head where it's like, there really are no fucking rules.
You're right.
You know?
That's
like,
true, man.
Trying to follow these rules when really it's all just like, you can really do whatever you want as long as it sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, which is just very freeing. And I know a lot of people like cling to music theory as something, I need to learn this before I can write music. And it's like, no, man. If you have an imagination and you know what sounds good and what doesn't, that's all you need.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to just make sure that that always takes the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And I never let somebody else drive my spaceship, ever. Right. You know, I'm the one who drives this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and all that other knowledge, that's great. I can consult with you about that. But, you know, and you can help guide me to what might be the path of least resistance tonally or something like that.
It's amazing how good we are as artists coming up with excuses not to do what we feel that we should do.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember like before I learned modes, right? Like I was like, I can't do a half step, a one semitone up off the root note. That's not major and that's not minor. That's not it. That's not in key. I can't do that. But then later I figured out the Phrygian mode, and that's exactly what the Phrygian mode does. It's a half step right out the gate. And it's like, oh, I can't do that. And I've been telling myself, because of this music theory that I learned, you can't do that.
Right.
And it's like, actually, music theory says you can do that.
Yeah.
And it's just called this. And you just hadn't learned about that yet. So like, as long as you trust yourself and know it sounds good, you know, that's all you need. And that's like a huge part of the whole like creative process, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with J. Cole today, actually. And he was talking about how it took him so long just to actually get to the place of where he was creating. And I might mess this up, but he was talking about how he was creating, and in the process of creating, he was constantly always trying to reach that next level of success. And he started hearing these voices of outside people in his head in different ways of saying, either this isn't good enough, or you need to make it this way to appeal to other people who are going to be listening to it. And how it took him a while to get out of that state of writing for other people.
Yeah.
And how when he had his most popular and best work, he was getting into a place of where he was blocking out that noise from his head as he was creating. And I was like, dude, I do that all the time. Whereas like, I'll be working on something and I'm like, yeah, this kind of slaps, but is so-and-so going to like it? Or is this going to fit this vibe of what I think it has to be because it needs to reach this audience or whatever. And like, and honestly, like it doesn't really matter. And most of the time, if you fall in love with it and it's something that you love and it's, you're not trying to create for somebody else, it's going to be the most original.
Well, that's the thing too. I love Rick Rubin says this. He goes, the audience doesn't know what they want.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't know of something that doesn't exist yet. So if you do try to write to the audience, you're just going to be a carbon copy in somebody else's wake. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from Nipsey Hussle, stay in your lane. There's no traffic there. You know, it's like, you know, the audience doesn't necessarily, they can't want something they haven't tried yet. If you've never tasted smoked paprika, you're not going to know that you like, that you want that, you know, so if you do that and you follow something that you just follow your own path and you end up where you are. And if you like it, it's gotta be good. And that's another thing that like spiritually, I believe is that we are all one collective conscious, right? And when you feel happiness, that's the same feeling that I feel when I feel happiness, that lightness in the chest, you know, when I feel depressed or something like that, that's the same feeling you feel. My depression doesn't feel different than yours. They might be situationally slightly contextually different, but like happiness and sadness, that's universal feelings. So if you can create a feeling with music, it's universal. If you like it, there's other people out there who are going to like it.
Absolutely.
You know, and if you break down music too, this is an interesting thought I had recently kind of on like the psychology of almost like more like physiology of music, but music's just wiggly air. So it's just wiggly air. And you're telling me that if I take a frequency that's like, you know, 422 hertz, and that's like an, let's say 440 hertz, and that's an A, and then I don't know the rest of them up, but like say the C is like, you know, 482, and then you take an E that's like 510 or something like that, and you take those wiggles of air and you put those next to each other, that makes you want to text your ex-girlfriend. That's a minor chord, right? That makes you want to drive your car 40 miles over the speed limit. Like, that's crazy. It's all just wiggles of air going through us, right?
Yeah.
And that's all it is different shapes of vibrations. The smoother it is, the more clean it is, the more sine wavy it is, the more wiggles it has in the vibration, the more harmonics it has, the more different texture it has. And, you know, the amplitude is the volume, right? And then these wiggles make us feel these things, right? So have you ever seen like those like analog cymatics videos of like they put the sand on the plate?
Yeah.
Right? And then like if you put the right frequencies through it, it makes a design. Well, sand, cool, right? But we're humans, right? What are we mostly?
Water.
Right? So as music goes through us, we are our own analog cymatics and these designs. And what's mostly water? Your brain, too. So when you listen to music, this wiggly air is not just wiggly air, but it's creating these patterns and movements in your head because we're all just water bags, essentially, being vibrated to this music in these really ornate and like, you know, fractal or whatever way you want to think about it type things, you know?
That's so cool, man. I could nerd out about this all day.
Yeah.
Have you heard about the love frequency?
No, what's this?
528 hertz apparently is like, what they call it, the love frequency. And like, I just pulled up this article. They call it like the miracle tone. But basically, there was like a bunch of experiments done around this where they would just blast like speakers into the ocean or something. Yeah, here's an article. So they basically, they ended up shooting a bunch of these frequencies into the water and polluted water. And they saw the molecular structure of the water change in the polluted water and created like this beautiful like snowflake design and actually cleaned up some of the water from the pollution.
Which that's insane.
Which is wild. Like the water, apparently the oil spill, like I guess receded or something. I don't know. I'd have to like read more into this article, but I heard about this the other day.
Yeah.
There's also like a school of fish. They shot like this frequency into the water and like there was like thousands of fish within like the hour that like came up to the shoreline that was like cluttered around the speakers and where the frequency was being shot into.
That's so sick, man. Yeah, I went on a I went on a vision quest one time, I'll just say. And it was just sort of like this thing sort of told me is like, you know, man, everything is frequencies. So everything in this reality is all frequencies. Getting a little hippy dippy here, but
I love it.
Yeah. And like, you know, everything is frequencies. So like the hard table is molecularly being held together at a tighter vibration. The softer things are vibrating at a slower thing. That's why they're softer, right? Light is vibrations. Sound is vibrations, right? Emotions, like, so anxiety is a high frequency that's out of phase with itself versus joy is a high frequency that's in phase. Depression is a low frequency that's out of phase, and relaxation is a low frequency that's in phase. So like technically everything is frequencies in this reality, I think. And I really like believe that and stuff like that. And it's so cool because music is a language of frequencies, you know? And I feel like aliens, if they did speak, the most highest form of language would just be like vibrating at different, you know, vibrating at different frequencies for different letters, and a word could be like a chord or something like that.
They're talking at like 3 million hertz.
You know? Yeah, yeah, no, or something pretty like sweet. That, you know? So it's like, it makes perfect sense. It reminds me of, I'll throw this back to my my millennial crowd, but you could hack your MySpace and do like HTML and like change whatever you want. It's like frequencies are just like the programming of our reality.
Good old MySpace.
Good old MySpace. Where are you at, MySpace, dude? Like everything's falling apart over
What's
here.
What's Tom doing these days from MySpace?
Oh, Tom sold his crap and is living a free life.
Is he really?
Yeah, yeah. Tom, apparently, like, he sold MySpace to Justin Timberlake, yeah, for $580 million.
Wow.
And just went and just traveled. Dude is a photographer now. Yeah.
Good for him.
Exactly what I would do, man.
Dude, good for Tom. He deserves that. He spent a lot of time connecting people, so.
Should he,
Good for Tom. He's living his dream right now.
Profile songs.
He's in Hawaii, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, just living his best life. Sold $580 million is enough.
Yeah, he's doing just fine.
Unlike the other people who think that they are just like going to hoard more bananas than they can ever eat in their life.
Damn, dude. Tom's 47 years old. That makes me feel old.
Yeah, cool. So he's still got like, you know, like what? Like $10 million for each year of the rest of his life. I think he's going to be fine, right? Yeah.
He has a lot of friends still, I'm sure.
Yeah, versus these people who think they need like $40 billion to live their lives. Like, come on, bro.
He sold it for $580 million.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's one thing I'll never understand in this world is people who just hoard wealth like that. Like, bro, like a billion is enough, dog.
Sure.
Calm down, man.
Like, it's a lot of money, dude.
Look at how happy he looks.
He looks
dude.
So happy.
Unpossessed by the devil and just living his best life.
He's living his best life.
Got a cool hat on, man.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, dude.
I like that. What is he doing? Like his original picture, he's in front of a whiteboard or something. Yeah. He looks like he's a school teacher.
Yeah, he just looks, he's just always been happy, dude. He's just always been crushing it.
Good for you, Tom.
Good for you, Tom.
We're happy for him.
We're all proud of you.
We're real proud of you, dude. Yeah, keep slaying.
Yeah. But otherwise, with the creative process, man, like I don't hold myself to much. And I just love the process of writing music. And like gratitude's the answer for everything I've been finding. And I'm just grateful to be able to write music. And like I don't hold myself to anything. And so funny, dude. Some of the songs that I don't think I like very much, like people love and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a song for everyone, man. I love the Grateful Dead quote. The same song on a different day was a different song, you know? And it's like, you know, everything's situational and stuff like that. So just go out and create art. And if you connect with it and if it feels good to you, it's going to feel good to somebody else.
I love that, man. You know? That's one thing I really like about you, too, is like you've achieved a level of success and like you're still sticking to your roots and staying humble. And I think that's important for every artist to remember, you know?
Just wait till I blow up more. Just kidding.
Just be balling.
No, man. Yeah.
I mean, we all sit and poop the same way. Like,
exactly,
that's my favorite quote. On
everyone's shit stinks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's something I went through some really tough times in like my 20s and stuff like that. And the one pattern I could always see, I was never grateful. I always wanted more, whether it was drugs or alcohol or fame or followers or anything like that. When I was unhappy, I was wanting, you know, and when I sort of let go of that and just said, you know, whatever is what it is. Like, you know, I got the word "so it goes" tattooed on me, which is my favorite author's Kurt Vonnegut from the book Slaughterhouse-Five. But it's like, hey, man, like whatever happens, happens. Just stay humble and, you know, and just have fun and make music and just, you know, if you give your life to other people kind of, and you worry more about other people's happiness than your own, your problems disappear and shrink really, really fast.
That's really true.
You know,
that's
and if really you're more true. Worried about yourself and your own happiness, that's a dragon that you're just going to keep chasing for the rest of your life and you're never going to catch it. But you let that fucker go, he'll circle right back around and come sit at your lap.
Yep.
You know,
that's true, man. That's really wise. I mean, Quincy Jones, obviously most people, everybody knows Quincy, but he has one of my favorite quotes is like, have humility when you create and grace when you succeed, because you are a terminal for a higher power. And as soon as you can accept that, you'll do it forever.
Yeah. A terminal for a higher power. That circles back to what we just said, is that we're all kind of connected, man.
Yeah.
Like, you're only doing stuff for everyone, man, which is another thing. Like, you know, how could you be prejudiced or hateful towards anyone when we're all just doing everything for everyone? We're all on the same rock together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all just germs on a small blue dot circling some tiny little star in the vastness of nowhere. And you've got the gall to think you're more important than somebody else.
Right.
Like, and that's a huge thing that I try to push with my brand. I'm always putting like Carl Sagan quotes in my music. There's this one song I have called Cosmic Selector that's not out yet that I play very rare situations when I think the crowd's ready for it. But it's like got this minute and a half intro. And one of my favorite quotes is like, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some sort of purpose, you know, or whatever like that. It's like, you know, man,
yeah,
like you don't have, we have purpose, but you know, by yourself is even more minuscule than this planet, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. In the end of the day, every successful person on a large scale has had other people help them get there.
Oh, always, dude. Yeah.
Always.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I say that about my music a lot too. Like, it's like people like, especially some of my students, like, how did you make this by yourself? Well, actually, I went over to my friend Kyrol's house. You know, my buddy Colin always helps me out. My buddy Soda and lots of other people. Like, I show them the song and they're like, oh, you should do this. And I'm just like, oh, shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even my songs, like, you know, I have the input of my friends and stuff like that. That helps me. And, like, I don't really do anything by myself.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's just really, really interesting.
That collaboration, too, opens up a whole new way of thinking that maybe you never approached a song or a different avenue of where you're going with a project, and having an outside person just open up your ideas to like, hey, what if we added a bass line here or did something different here?
It's always add silence. You should cut everything out right here. And then we cut everything out and I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds so much better. Yeah. Or, you know, delete this stupid buildup and just have it slide right in. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, dude, how did I not think about that?
It's really funny you know? You say that, because I feel like my music has more space now than it ever has, as far as just creating that silence, because it allows other things to shine more in a mix.
Yeah, yeah. That's something I've been pushing with myself a lot, is I call it pseudo silence. So it's not exactly silence, but it's like reverb tails dying out and delays and like other things like that in those little parts, because I feel like music, right, is largely vocal throughout our human existence, you know? And what does a vocalist need to do? They need to inhale, right? And if you don't leave that inhale part in your music, it's like a run-on sentence. It just goes and people get exhausted and it's like you're rambling, you know? But just that little bit of silence, that inhale, just adds so much. And when we're being overzealous and we're trying to write the world's best song, it's like, I need to add more. I need to add more. I need to add more. And it doesn't work, which also brings me to one of my favorite things about the creative process is a quote I heard from a YouTube video. My buddy Joe, who goes by Spades, who you guys should check out. He makes amazing music. It said, a sandwich is not inherently better just because it has more ingredients. In fact, you're more likely to not like that sandwich the more ingredients it has.
Mm.
Right? So like bread, sure. Yeah, what kind? Sourdough? Sure, cool. But if you hit me with that crazy rye bread, I probably would have been out. Turkey? I mess with it. Cheese? Okay, what kind? Because blue cheese is a little crazy. Like, give me some chill cheese, right? Cheddar, Swiss? Yeah, yes, hell yeah. Lettuce? Yeah, cool. Tomatoes? If they're cut thinly, for me, I don't like thick tomatoes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then let's say you decide to get fancy and put olives on the sandwich. Fuck you. I'm out. I hate olives. Olives are disgusting.
All kinds of olives.
People who like olives, you guys are disgusting.
I understand. Yes. Actually, I used to think olives were like weird eyeballs, like kind of like gross eyeballs. Yeah,
they're eyeballs that grow on trees. Yeah. Which would be cool album art.
But then I went to Israel and I had like legit olives off of the olive trees over there. And that changed my life.
Dude, yeah, I'm Greek. So don't tell my mom I don't like olives.
Oh, dude, you're Greek. You don't like olives?
I know, dude. She's going to be mad. Sorry, mom.
Sorry, we'll cut this part out.
Well, actually, it always meant more olives for her. So
yeah, that's probably, yeah, she's probably happy.
Yeah, you know, the more stuff you put onto a song too, the less likely someone is to like it, which actually, you know, really, when I finally kind of got into that, I really understood pop music a lot better. You know, pop music is something that's palatable and digestible for a mass amount of people. So many people can say, yes, I like this. I enjoy this, you know? And that's a really hard thing to do, you know, is to make something that's so massively acceptable by so many people and stuff like that while still staying unique and good, you know, which is like a huge respect for pop music that I've had. I've turned into a Halsey fanatic. Her album Manic is like one of my favorite albums of all time. And it's so unique and cool, but it's also so incredibly simple throughout the whole song, the whole album. You know, nothing gets crazy. There's no crazy time signatures. There's no crazy key changes. There's no insane sound design. It's just good straight up music, man. And I found that so inspiring because I grew up like a little hipster emo kid, you know, where it had to be experimental, crazy, you know, nuts music and stuff like that. And for me in my more mature years to go, I love pop music.
Yeah.
Like it's so good. It's so simple and it's so like acceptable and stuff like that, that it's like, holy cow, how have I been sleeping on this for so long?
Well, I think that speaks to your music too, and why people are drawn to it is because you don't always listen to the same thing. You draw from different sources and different genres and styles and kind of pick and choose like a buffet style from different elements, whether you realize it consciously or subconsciously, and then apply that to your own music. Yeah. And so like, I don't know. I would imagine that some of my favorite artists probably have a very wide range of genres that they listen to and love, because a lot of the artists I listen to, like, I mean, their stuff sounds original or unique to me anyway. Oh. So, you know, I would imagine that they probably listen to all kinds of stuff. I know I do.
What are like my favorites? I mean, like, so, I mean, I grew up, Blink-182 was my favorite band growing up. My first biggest musical influences. So my best friend growing up, Kevin, had a really cool older brother. His name was Luke. And
shout out Luke.
Luke, man. Luke messed us up, bro. We're over here listening to like some crap, you know, and he's like, check this out. This is Wu-Tang Iron Flag. It was like one of the first out, because Wu-Tang Iron Flag had just dropped when I was like 9 or 10 or something like that. And he was like, check this out. And he showed us Wu-Tang. And I was like, what is this? This is so fresh and dope. And then he also got us into Tool. Was the other thing, which was really crazy.
I just saw them at Bonner like 2 years ago.
Dude, I've never seen any of my favorite bands live. It's too big of a pain in the ass to get tickets. They're good. Just don't roll like that.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so like Wu-Tang and Bone Thugs and Tool were like some of the first music that I really like kind of really opened my mind. And then that led me to like the Mars Volta, who I recently saw at the Mission Ballroom, blew my mind. They still got it. They're still so sick. Yeah, and then that led me listening to a lot of weird stuff in high school. Electronic music like Venetian snares was something that I got into when I was kind of young. It was just really, really crazy stuff. Boards of Canada was also there. Perfect Circle, obviously, too. Perfect Circle was cool because it had a lot more like production going on than Tool and stuff like that. Generally, I feel like.
You ever listen to This Will Destroy You?
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, like Explosions in the Sky, Godspeed You Black Emperor. I'm really into post-rock. So like, when I go home and I just need like a meditative guitar session, I turn my delay pedal all the way up and like just like play a chord, just arpeggiate it and let those delays ring out.
Just like 50 second delays.
Dude, yeah, just harmonizing with them and stuff.
Love that.
And then like Dance Gavin Dance is definitely another one of my favorite all time bands. Black Dahlia Murder too. So like really into metal and stuff like that. Black Dahlia Murder, I love them because like all their songs are like, it sounds really angsty, but all their songs are about like sea monsters and stuff like that. It's just like kind of silly. But Wu-Tang, Bone Thugs, Tool, Blink-182, Sum 41, like a lot of punk rock, a lot of angstier stuff. From First to Last, shout out Skrill, my boy Sonny. From First to Last was always one of my favorite bands and stuff like that. I don't really listen to electronic music, I'm not going to lie. I don't really like a lot of it. Some of my favorite electronic artists are like Tie-Dye Kai. Pretty Lights was always one of my favorites. Pretty Lights is the one who inspired me to start making electronic music. I was a big metalhead. I was playing in this metal band called The Celebrator in Chicago, and we were like doing like the whole hardcore metal circuit and stuff like that. And then my friend Nikki, my best friend, she's really into Umphrey's, and so she dragged me to summer camp. She's like, "We're just gonna go party in the woods for like a weekend. You gotta come. I don't care if you don't like this music and stuff like that." And I was like, "Whatever, I'll go party with you guys, but I'm not gonna like it, you know." And then I saw Pretty Lights play. I saw Pretty Lights and Skrillex that year, I think. And and I was stoked to see Skrillex because I was a big From First to Last fan. And I had followed him from when he left From First to Last to when he started his own little electronic thing, was just Sunny. So if you look up like Lust Bug or Glow Worm, those are some old like Sunny songs, not Skrillex yet.
That was like 2008.
Or something like that. Yeah. And so I followed him through that. And then I was there. I like witnessed the Skrillex thing get born because I was just following my favorite singer from one of my favorite bands. So I was stoked to see him. But then I saw Pretty Lights. And I was like, holy cow, so this can be heavy, this can be beautiful, this can be soulful. It was like Wu-Tang meets like fuck, like bass and like all this stuff. And I was like, this is amazing, dude. And so funny, I went there an angsty metalhead and I left with a Grassroots hat with like four pins in it. And I was just like, went home and torrented Ableton right away. Sorry if any of the reps are listening. I bought it. I've bought it.
yeah, Alberto, we're good.
I got the extended free trial and I'm sorry. I'm not perfect.
Okay, you're not the only one, I'm sure.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Demonoid, Pirate Bay.
Yeah. R.I.P. Pirate.
Bozzy D 1970 was an uploader who uploaded everything good. I miss him. I wonder what he's doing right now. If you're listening, Fozzy, like, I miss you.
Hit him up.
But yeah, and then I went home and I started making beats, and it was really funny because like I was still in the metal band, and they're all like, "So you got Ableton now, and you got Superior Drummer, like, so that means, and you write the guitar parts, so it's like, can you just record the guitar parts and then just put some drums in there? And like, since you're doing the bass too, since you're doing the guitar too, yeah, why don't you just write the bass lines in there? Oh, and you also do the vocals too, so why don't you just lay all those down and then bring it to practice?"
Yeah, no big deal.
And I was like, cool, dude, I don't need like, you know, like a relationship with four other like people with serious problems in their life, like trying to manage you guys. Like, I think I'm going to do this by myself now, yeah, guys. And then, my music thing was kind of born out of that because I was just like, you know what? Word for sure. And it took me a while to actually start taking like this like music production seriously. It was really hard. If there's any young producers out there who, you know, you have that passion in your heart, but you're afraid to call yourself a DJ producer guy, you know, and you're afraid to be like, check out my SoundCloud. Just go for it. Just jump in. Don't live your life thinking that, you know, when you're dead and you're lying on your deathbed, what if I did try this thing? You know, go for it. Love it. Do it. If anything, you'll end up with a beautiful journal. But I spent like 3 or 4 years being like, yeah, I make music in Ableton, but I'm not like trying or anything like that, you know? And it took till I moved to Colorado to really be like, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to actually do this and put like my whole heart into it. Yeah.
Dude, it seems like it's working out too.
It's going all right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then I went through that and yeah, got caught up in the partying scene. And then now that I've put that in my past, I'm really treating this whole thing a lot more like a business and, you know, looking at it a lot more professional scope. And not, you know, just because there's 12 beers and they're free in the green room doesn't mean you have to drink them all.
You have to drink all 12.
You have to. You're not allowed to leave. They're not going to book you again unless you drink all the beers and yell really loud.
All the cool kids are doing it.
No. Yeah. That's another thing I found out about the music industry. I feel like the hard way is that all the kids who are there to party and just like, you know, do drugs and drink and stuff like that, that's like the cesspool, sticky floor of the venue, bottom of the music industry, I feel like. And everyone else who actually wants to do it tucks their shirt in and sends emails all day.
Yeah.
And really hustles and sees it as a business. And I think it was, probably 4 years ago, I think I have 3 years ago. 3-4 years ago, I say I put all of that behind me finally, just cold turkey, and just like, it was like, I can't do this anymore. My life was in shambles. I was still doing music and I was trying to take it seriously, but I was just my own worst enemy, you know, with just substances and stuff like that. And
so what was the turning point for you when you decided to take that?
Oh, I lost my mind. I literally lost my mind one day and I ended up in like the hospital and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
shit, man.
Like, yeah, in like a 72-hour hold. Wow. And I have no recollection of anything. That I'd love to describe it in more detail, but I have no recollection. I just woke up in the hospital.
Wow.
And they're like, yeah, you were basically dead.
Wow.
And that's crazy. And also my son too really saved my life for sure. And even after he was born, I still didn't really have my shit together, but it really took like a couple good punches to the face to be like, holy cow, man, like you've got to set a good example for this dude and you've got to be around and you can't be a deadbeat loser, you know? So like, shout out Jude, you saved my life, my dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's playing drums too now, isn't he?
Oh, he's playing guitar. He says he's better than me at guitar. I try to show him stuff, but he goes, you know what? I'm better than you, so watch this.
Like, hold on, Dad. Let me show you how it's done.
Yeah, he's got a couple songs. He's got a song called Black Hole of Love that he wrote about his mom.
I love that.
He's got a song called Get Off My Porch, which is about the police. Because him and his mom live like downtown. So during like the George Floyd riots and stuff like that, he was so mad at the police because he like couldn't go outside. So he wrote a song called Get Off My Porch. And he basically essentially just bangs on his guitar and yells, get off my porch. He has all these lyrics and he memorizes the whole song. It's awesome.
That's that Wu-Tang gene that you pass down the line.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite thing is watching him like sing along to songs that he likes and stuff like that. And when he thinks no one's watching and stuff like that, he just like gets into it and
love
stuff
that.
Like that. And I'm like, I did the same thing. Which is a huge thing that I funnel a lot of my like musical like inspiration from, is that when I was a kid, I would sing into the shampoo bottle, I call it, you know, in hindsight. Like I was the lead singer in the bathroom at 6:30 in the morning when I was getting ready for school, you know. And just like pretending like I was on stage and just like really expressing myself, and seeing him do that like really lights up my life and stuff like that. So yeah, man.
Dude, I appreciate you sharing that too. And like, honestly, I feel like sometimes being refined in the fire like that, you come out so much stronger and probably have like a whole new perspective and a new passion just with music in general. When you like, when you go face to face with like the really honest, vulnerable, hard shit in your life. And like when you can come face to face with that and realize what it is and like make that step to want to be better for not only yourself, but the people around you, like it's obvious that that's happened.
It was the people around me. I didn't realize how many people I was hurting. You know, and like, you know, dragging other people down, stuff like that. And let me tell you to all like the young musicians out there, drugs and alcohol will never solve anything. They will consistently make things worse. It will never make you better. It'll never make you funnier or cooler or anything like that. When you see people that seem to handle their stuff and they do a lot of drugs and drink a lot, I promise you, if you go follow them around for a week, their lives are in shambles too. You know, that stuff doesn't do anything good for anyone. Everything in small doses is fine. For sure. But like that shit is just so bad. And it's one of the biggest tricks that out here in life is thinking that these things are going to solve your problems or do something for you.
100%.
And let me tell you, they just weigh you down. And
I agree.
It took me a really long time to really figure that out for myself. But now that I know that, I can just clearly avoid these icebergs, you know?
I can totally relate to that too. Yeah. That's not something I talk about a lot, but I definitely was in some heavier drugs and stuff and went through NA back in the day. Yeah. And like I came out a lot stronger from it. And like, I look back, I don't have any regrets, but you know, I think it's a life balance thing. Not that I touch any of that anymore, but, you know, I think everything in some moderation, and some people have the ability to be able to kind of walk that fence.
Yeah.
And some people are just like addicts like myself. Yeah. And so it's sometimes all or nothing. And when you recognize it's better just to not touch it and just move on, then like, once you have that realization, you're just in a much healthier place because you know where you stand and where your limits are.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for everybody. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely some things out there that I won't ever go near. I don't like being around stuff like that. But then there's like other things that don't really bother me at all, you know, and I can kind of like, you know, have a couple beers. I'm totally fine. Right. But like, yeah. Cheers to beers, dude.
Cheers to the beers.
Yeah.
And recyclable foil cups.
Oh yeah.
That's very important.
Save the planet.
That's right, dude. Absolutely. I know we're getting short on time. Dude, thanks for being a part of my first in-person podcast.
Oh, hey,
well, that's not true. This is technically the second one.
Yeah.
The first one was with Ross Phillips. Shout out Ross. He's a homie. He's now got residency doing lasers at the Brooklyn Mirage.
Oh, that's awesome.
He just did like a Big Gigantic Nightmare and Skrillex.
Dude, I just heard about the Mirage when I was
it's a dope venue.
The East Coast last weekend. It's on a rooftop. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. I actually haven't been there, but it's on the list. I'm going to hit up Ross and come visit him and watch him throw down some lasers soon. But anyway, now this is the first of many podcasts at KMG. And what's next? What's upcoming? You got this album coming out pretty soon?
Yes, dude. I'm so stoked on this album. Ghost Ride the Spaceship. So it's a concept album that I kind of cooked up and I'm really stoked on it. So it's kind of an allegory for my life. So like the first song is called Kick Dust. And basically the story of the album overall is kind of like, there's a wannabe spaceman, a guy who feels really like lost in life. And so what he does is he builds his own spaceship in order to get off the planet, you know, and to go on an adventure because he'd rather be anywhere than stuck where he is. And he goes off and he blasts off into space. He meets this cool alien dude, Astro Jones, and then they start driving the spaceship recklessly. They end up running into some like asteroid field type stuff and like, you know, get kind of attacked by something, and they slip into a wormhole, and then they end up going through the wormhole and getting lost and have no way to get home. So they're just lost in space together. There's no way to get back to where they were, and they make the best out of it. So like the first song is Kick Dust. And that's got a bunch of like samples from this John F. Kennedy speech about going to the moon. It's like, we must go to the moon, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really energetic and it blasts off. And then that's you breaking out of the atmosphere and going into space. And then once he gets out of the solar system, he meets Astro Jones, which is the second song. And then Astro Jones is like this fun-loving, debaucherous alien dude who's like, yo, what's up? The guy, we talked about him already, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you party with him, you make a song with him. And the next song, Gassed Up, is basically you guys just flooring the spaceship, just like driving recklessly through space. Like, check this out. We can do barrel rolls stuff like
that's
that.
That's the dream.
Yeah. And then the song after that's called Space Blaster. And that's kind of where the trouble starts. It's like a mid-tempo bassier song. And then that is kind of where you guys start like losing stability of the ship and losing control. And then is the interlude. And the interlude's where you go through the wormhole. And the interlude I wrote in multiple time signatures. It's in 7/4 and 5/4.
Wow.
It's really, really weird sounding. It's got that JFK thing in it. And I kind of like messed with the vocals. So it really feels weird and stuff like that. And it's got this weird, like coming out of the wormhole thing with this big cheer in it. And it's like this weird song that's not almost like less of a song and more of like this like soundscape with a beat and like these weird time signatures and all sorts of weird stuff. And then you go out of that and you wake up and it's the song Elevation. That one is more like, whoa, we just went through a wormhole. Where the hell are we? There's so much beautiful stuff going on and all sorts of stuff like that. And then you go into Chaka next, I think. No, Electric Indigo next. And that one is more of like, holy cow, we're lost in space and it's freaking beautiful, man. Like, we're making the best out of it. This is a beautiful journey. You know, we're in the Electric Indigo, the indigo space, and we're just beautiful out here and we're just flying through and we don't need anything. And then it's Chaka, which is just a very like interesting, weird song of that feels like really new and weird to me. And
this is quite the journey.
Yeah. And then, the last real song on there is called My Sunshine. And that one is a very pretty, like energetic type thing. And it's sort of to be the feeling of like when you've been in dark space forever and you finally see another star. Mm. And the sunshine like hits your face and it's like, oh wow, I feel sort of home again in a new place. And then the last song is called Voyager Part 1. And it's a 12-minute like hip-hop psychedelic odyssey thing, which is the next wormhole to the next album. So after My Sunshine, they sort of see a wormhole and they're like, let's go in it. We're already lost.
So there's going to be a whole nother concept album?
There's going to be a whole nother concept album after this one. So the next releases, I think I'm going to call... something like Strange Planets or something like that, where they sort of visit these different worlds, and one of them's going to be Dream. One of them, I already know, is going to be called the Infinity Hotel, which is going to be a lot more experimental and stuff like that, really interesting. And then I have another one that's going to be a lot more pretty songs and like more heartfelt, like emotional type music. And then I'm going to have another one that's like the Funky Planet.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And then I'm going to drop the next album too, which I've already started working on.
Dude, that's mm-hmm. quite the story. Love that.
Yeah. And the next album, I think I'm going to call Colors You Can't See, which just kind of speaks to like reality and like, you know, we're so bound by our own human perceptions. Like what is the raw reality? How many colors are there out there in this room that the rods in my eyes and the cones in my eyes aren't detecting? And how many more sounds are there out there? And so like,
yeah,
I've only like kind of put together a couple songs and I like to write them all. But yeah, the idea of a concept album was amazing because I believe like those arbitrary restrictions and putting yourself into a setting and giving yourself something to create around helps fuel that creativity so much. You know, if you look at arbitrary restrictions throughout the world, like hip hop, like the SP-1200, like what you can only sample like 12 seconds total between all like 8 of the things or whatever. Or something like that. Like, so these arbitrary restrictions really help me create. and stuff like that.
Totally.
But I got that. And then I have the big show at Cervantes. So if anyone in around the Denver area is listening, it's going to be an album release party. I'm headlining Cervantes Ballroom on August 19th. And
that's a dope venue, man. Congrats. Yeah, that's really sick. I love Cervantes.
Cervantes has been a home to me. It's been my church ever since I moved to Colorado, and to headline the Ballroom is just an honor and a blessing. So I'm really hoping to pack it out and see everyone there. And
dude, I was going to ask you, can you change the date? Because I'm going to be out of state.
Yeah, let's change the date to whenever it's convenient to Dan.
Yeah, if you could do that, that would be really helpful for me. Because I was really pissed when I saw you post that. I was like, damn it, I'm not going to be here.
Well, it's fine. You can still buy a ticket and support.
That's true. Yeah. I could. Can you just FaceTime me? Just on stage there. Just set me up side stage. I would appreciate it.
You want the behind the stage, like the VIP?
Or maybe like a side stage. That way I can still see you and maybe the front crowd reaction.
Well, I look best from behind, I'm not going to lie. So my little Hank Hill ass and stuff. I believe like that. So.
Yeah, dude. I've got a ghetto booty, I was told.
Yeah, so yours is large, dude.
It's pretty big, honestly. It gets in the way sometimes, but that's the price you pay for looking good from behind.
That's what happens.
I was going to tell you, have you seen this? This came out, I think, maybe 8 or 9 months ago. They actually sampled a black hole.
Oh, I have all these sounds.
Isn't this? Did you use this
on the interlude.
No way.
Yep.
This new album?
Those other stuff, yep. Yep, I use a lot of those space sounds for this weird stuff. I use some of them on Chaka, too.
Chaka.
So I do this really cool thing with any sound where I just take the pitch and I close my eyes and I hold command to draw like a free line with the automation and I just squiggle and it sounds like color bass.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, so I just take something with a fundamental, like a root note, and I just... and it makes these like sounds, and it's
dude.
So I did that with some of those space sounds for Chaka.
So cool.
That's like the main sound in that song.
Yeah, they said the black hole was playing a B flat note 57 octaves below middle C.
That's a lot of octaves for our listeners at home.
That's a lot of octaves, dude. So they had to raise it to actually be audible. This is what it sounded like, apparently.
Yep. This is in the interlude for sure.
That's a black hole. That's so crazy, man. That's so crazy. Well, yeah, I'm glad to hear that you sampled that.
Yeah, I sample anything and everything.
Dude, I can't wait to hear the new album. Congratulations on the new album. Dude, thanks so much for coming and hanging out.
Man,
this has been a blast.
Thank you for having me, man. This has been a load of fun. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I'm honored to have you on the podcast. Like, it's been cool to like see you teach, and you've done some music group events, and you're killing it right now. So I'm like super happy for you and like excited to see more.
Dope. Thank
for
you,
sure,
man.
Say
dude,
the
this
least.
Has been awesome.
Dude, it's sick, man.
It's an awesome podcast.
Thank you. Yeah we'll have you back another time.
Dude, I'd love that, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Next time, we'll try a different beer. This Modelo Negra was pretty good.
The dark Modelos are so good, dude.
Thanks for introducing me to that.
Yeah, it's like a nice, like heavier beer for the lighter at heart, you know?
Do you have a favorite local Denver beer?
Comrade Superpower is probably my favorite, but I grew up in Chicago, and I feel like, I don't know, maybe because I was younger, but I feel like a lot of the local beers out there are a lot better.
Really? See, I've always
I just feel
heard...
like, I don't know, I think it's I just got older and all the beer tastes the same to me now.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
But local Chicago beer, Comrade Superpower is probably my favorite.
Okay.
But I can't ever find it anywhere. So, yeah.
Well, I'm going to find a good local Denver beer to sponsor the podcast, maybe.
Oh,
and
that'd
then
be awesome.
We'll just hook up KMG crew around here, free beers for everyone.
Dude, free beers, that's what I need.
That's the dream.
That'll keep me talking in class.
Yeah. Speaking of being sober and
well, you got to find I feel like people's brain chemistry is different. Like, so there's certain things that you just like your brain will latch onto, and there's like, there's certain things that aren't like a big deal. So it's really about finding what works for you and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know. Exactly, man.
You know.
Exactly. Well, you're doing good things now. Thanks again for joining the podcast.
Dude, of course.
Thanks everybody
for
listening.
Me.
Everybody check out the links in the show notes per usual and give Homemade Spaceship, AKA Rob, a follow. And you won't be sorry. Go smash all of his posts and then go to his Cervantes show,
dude.
Which I won't be there, but I'll be FaceTimed, right?
I'll be there in spirit.
That's right. I will be for sure.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate everyone. Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Later.
Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you didn't hate this podcast episode, please leave a Spotify review. Give me those 5 stars. It would really help me out a lot. And I can crank out more content like this. Also, don't forget to check all the links in the show notes for this episode for more details. Follow the guests, give them some love. If you want to stay connected with new upcoming episodes and be the first to see them come out, along with other free Max for Live devices or sample packs or things that I'll be sending out for free, join the newsletter. Just go to liveproducersonline.com/newsletter. Link in the show notes for that as well. Also, if you didn't know, you can interact with me and others on this podcast. Tell me what you think about this episode. If you go to Spotify and click on the episode, then there is a place where you can share your comments, thoughts, and it's a great way to connect with me and others about each episode. Much love. Until next time, I'll see you later.